Okay, thanks very much. Thanks very much for the invitation to speak here. It's a real pleasure to speak here. I'm going to talk about a paper that appeared about a month ago with Hiroshi Aguri, Xuheng Shao, and Yifan Wang, two of whom are in the audience, but I think I'll leave it an exercise for you to figure out which two those are. So maybe before I get into the nitty-gritty, I'm going to start by motivating the general class of questions we're interested in and also giving a summary of our results. So I think we would all agree that two-dimensional conformal field theories are quite important, and they have a variety of applications. So you may be interested in 2D CFTs for several reasons. You may be interested in critical phenomena in two dimensions. You may be interested in string theory and want to study the string world sheet. And you may be interested in quantum gravity and ADS3. And there are other, like, perfectly fine reasons to be interested in 2D CFTs. But despite this subject being actually quite old, we, in some sense, we know very little about the space of 2D CFTs. So I'm going to pose a couple of questions, some of which have been addressed by some of the previous speakers, just as sort of motivation for us to think about. I'm not going to answer these questions, but these are good to keep in the back of the mind. One question is, what is the maximum scaling gap allowed as a function of C? So for example, Tom talked about this last week, and I think, although I was not here, I think Nima talked about this the first week. This is an open question. In the space of 2D CFTs, as a function of central charge, what's the maximum scaling gap? As C goes large, can you even get something that scales with C? The scaling gap to the first non-trivial Virasoro primary operator. Another question we may be interested in is, what universal features are present for some generic irrational 2D CFTs? And Alex talked about this a little last week, and although I was not here, I think Scott also talked about this the first week. These universal features, it's kind of interesting. There are many conjectured universal features, but in many cases we have little or no examples because the 2D CFTs that are studied most carefully are rational CFTs, which, although they're very beautiful and interesting, in many ways they're absolutely not representative of a generic CFT or believed not to be representative. And finally, the third question, which I'll sort of focus on today, is can we construct, it's related to the second one, can we explicitly construct an irrational CFT that's in some sense far away from any rational CFT. So, well, not far away, I can give you a trivial example. I can give you a free boson at radius pi. This is maybe a lawyer answer, but it's technically true, which is the best kind of true. One quantitative way I'm going to address this third question is studying something called the twist gap of a theory. So first, let me define the twist of an operator, as everyone in this room knows. I'm going to define it to be 1/2 the difference between the total scaling dimension and the spin. This factor of 1/2 is a little bit unconventional, but otherwise there are going to be really annoying factors of 2, so please forgive me if you're used to this without a factor of 2. And in two dimensions, this is simply the minimum of the left and right moving scaling dimensions of the operator. And I'm going to define the twist gap of a CFT to be the minimum value of the twist amongst all non-vacuum Virasoro primary operators. Because I'm a very sophisticated person, I'm going to write this as the infimum instead of the minimum, because it is logically possible that there is no there's an accumulation point at some twist t, but there's no operator literally at this t. This is research over non-vacuum Virasoro primers. So why is this an interesting quantity? So let's consider 2D CFTs with central charge bigger than one and that are compact and unitary. If the theory is rational, you can easily show that the theory has to have extra currents. Currents, by currents, I mean a Virasoro primary operator where one of H or H bar is precisely zero. So if the theory is rational, the twist gap is zero. Moreover, if the theory is very close to being rational, so for example, it's, you know, there's an exactly marginal operator that you can deform arbitrarily small to reach some rational theory, the twist gap will also be zero by conformal perturbation theory. So a generic CFT that satisfies condition number three is that the twist gap is not zero. So this is a sufficient condition, but it's not necessary. But it is believed that a generic 2D CFT will have non-zero twist gap. Although this is probably like a widely held belief, and probably most people in the room would believe this, we don't know of a single example of a 2D CFT that we can explicitly calculate this twist gap where we know that the answer is not zero. So for example, it's logically possible, although unlikely, it's logically possible that all CFTs, for example, have a vanishing twist gap. It's probably a lamppost effect, but it would be good to quantify. So say again? Every compact, that's right, good. Liouville would, of course, be an exception, so every compact unitary C bigger than one CFT. This may be the 21st century avatar of the problem that the ancient Greeks considered of whether or not every real number is rational. But so we're going to analyze this question by using a technique called the modular bootstrap, which has been talked about in other talks. And actually, I'm going to make an even stronger statement. So every compact unitary CFT that we know of has non-zero twist gap. I don't even know a counterexample of this statement at the level of the partition function, by which I mean the following. I don't know of a partition function that satisfies some axioms that I'm going to write down soon, but modular invariance, positivity, and discrete spectrum, such that if it were to be interpreted as a 2D CFT, would have a non-zero twist gap. So this is a much easier problem to solve, and even this problem I don't know the answer to, because it's much easier because, of course, there's much more to a CFT than just the spectrum of states. You have to solve all of the four-point functions and the partition function. I just need the spectrum of states. Okay, great. So this is the question we're going to explore. And let me just give you a summary of our results before we get into the technical details, just so to avoid any twist endings. We're going to give an argument that for every compact unitary CFT with C bigger than 1, the twist gap is bounded by C minus 1 over 32. I say argument because actually I'm not going to be able to provide a rigorous mathematical proof. There are going to be some leaps of faith, but I'll be honest and I'll tell you when the steps we make are like not quite kosher. If this bound is true, this bound is quite interesting for a number of reasons. So why do we care? I'll give two reasons that I think this is an interesting bound. The first is that this would be a universal statement about all 2D CFTs, all compact unitary CFTs, including very strongly coupled CFTs. And we don't use any of our usual tricks like large N or supersymmetry. So this Q is the only Q that's going to appear in this talk. The second reason this is interesting is that for this very special class of 2D CFTs that are holographically dual to large radius gravity and ADS3, this number is actually quite interesting because the BTZ black holes, this is below the BTZ threshold. So in ADS3, there are these solutions, there are black hole solutions called BTZ black holes, and the holographic interpretation of a classical BTZ black holes has both H and H bar bigger than C over 24 plus order 1 in the large C limit. I'll say more about this later. And what we are arguing is that there have to exist states which have H or H bar less than C over 24. So these states cannot classically be described by a BTZ black hole. So in some sense, this would be an argument that there's no pure theory of ADS3 gravity under the strictest possible definition of a pure theory of gravity. The strictest possible definition meaning every single non-vacuum state has a twist of order at or above order C over 24. And I'll comment more about that later in the talk. So this is the summary of the results. So are there any questions before we get into some equations? Yeah.
I think we know lots of CFTs that have non-zero twist gap. We just can't, they're chaotic. We can't solve them exactly, so we can't prove it.
Oh, okay, that's fine. There are some CFTs that we would, that there are conjectures that they have non-zero twist gap, but indeed we don't have even a numerical understanding of what their spectra are, and it's, you know, there's maybe even good evidence that there are some, you know, these CFTs are chaotic and would have non-zero twist gap, but we don't have any solution even numerically. So one conjecture, although I don't, as far as I know, there's no proof of this, is if you take three copies of the three states Poth model. So this is still a rational theory. This will be at central charge 2.4, and there's some relevant operator you can turn on, and this will generate a small flow. And there's the conjecture is that the IR fixed point has a non-zero twist gap. But as far as I'm aware, it's logically possible that actually the IR fixed point is secretly some rational CFT. Or I guess that's possible. I'm not sure. I think that's probably possible as well.
There are also Calabi-Yau examples.
But those will, okay, good. So there are also Calabi-Yaus, but I'll also give a lawyerly response, which is that here I define the twist gap over the Virasoro primaries, so there will be R currents from the supersymmetry algebra. But indeed, if you redefine this twist gap to define it over, say, the maximal chiral algebra available, so let's say n equals 2 at c equals 9, for example, then it's likely that like Calabi-Yau threefolds, for example, have non-zero twist gap at the generic point in a moduli space. Although that also is not proved.
But sorry, even that there's
the crazy possibility that much like the irrational numbers can be approximated by a close enough rational number, this could be true for Calabi-Yau.
That's right. It's also logically possible that a generic Calabi-Yau threefold, although it has no—that's certainly true that it'll have no currents. It's logically possible that as Leonardo says, they're like the rational numbers where you're always arbitrarily close to a rational CFT. There are some conjectures by some famous people saying that this is not true, but I think it's either way is logically possible as far as I know. Okay. Yeah, it's a nice question to think about. Okay, good. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on C bigger than 1, unitary compact CFTs. And first, I'm going to just give a brief review of first of the modular bootstrap in general and on previous rigorous bounds of the twist gap due to Tom Hartman, Scott Collier, Ying Lin, Xi Yin. So we define the partition function of the CFT as the usual trace. And we demand that this is invariant under all large diffeomorphisms of the torus. So the equation, the crossing equation that we're running down, is this. This group is SL2Z. It's the group of 2x2 matrices with determinant 1, with integer entries. And it's generated by two elements S, which roughly is some. Well, it'll take tau and tau bar to negative 1 over tau and tau bar, and t, which translates them by 1. For a 2D CFT that's C bigger than 1, the Virasoro characters are very simple. You can look them up in your favorite yellow book, and I've written them over here. But so we can expand the partition function in terms of characters of our algebra. And the name of the game is to find some set of these degeneracies, such as this equation is true for all q. So if you succeed in doing this, then you've solved, and these degeneracies should be positive in integers. If you succeeded in doing this, then you've solved the modular bootstrap. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't know of any solution of this equation where the H's start non-negative that have integer degeneracies. So the way I've written it here, I've included no currents. And for a C bigger than one, I don't know of a exact solution of this equation. If you relax the condition that the D's are discrete positive integers, I know of basically one class of solutions, which was in a very nice paper written about 10 years ago by Alex Maloney and Edward Witten, which I'll comment on more later. So if you take, that's a solution to this equation where you don't have any currents, but you have a continuous spectrum. So in this talk, we're going to focus on the light cone limit of this crossing equation, which is when I take tau and tau bar no longer to be complex conjugates, and I'm going to take, so tau and tau, tau is not equal to tau bar star, and I'm going to take, let's say tau is I beta, tau bar is negative I beta bar. So under the S transform, tau goes to I over beta, tau bar goes to negative I over beta bar. And I'm going to take the limit where I fix beta bar as beta goes to zero. So why is this an interesting limit? Let's look in the S frame here. In this limit, because I'm taking beta to zero, I'm heavily penalizing any states with non-zero twist. Right? Every state with twist t, there's a factor of e to the negative t over beta in front of this, the contribution to this state. So if the theory has a twist gap, which is by assumption, then that means that in this light cone limit, I'm going to take only the vacuum character. So this is the generalization of the Cardy argument where we take both beta and beta bar to zero, and there in the usual Cardy argument, you just need a scaling gap, like you know some operator with non-zero, the lightest operator is non-zero. Here I need something slightly stronger, I need a non-zero twist gap. But if so, I know precisely the contribution in the S channel up to some error, which is quantified by the value of the twist gap. And I can relate this to a sum over all states in the unprimed frame, and the dominant, the infinite number of terms that will reproduce the divergence I see in the S frame will be high spin operators, as is usual in any light cone limit. So I'll just write down the crossing equation. So I'll write the equation down and then we'll talk about it. So on the left-hand side, I'll have the unprimed contribution. So I'll write this density of states as a continuum. So you should think of it as a discrete sum of delta functions. And this right-hand side is the contribution from the vacuum. And it's a little bit complicated because the vacuum character has these null states that you have to deal with, but it's not so bad. Okay, so this left-hand side is the contribution in the untwisted, in the unprimed frame. So here, beta is very small, so at very large spin, there's like barely any penalty for going to large spin. But here, I needed to reproduce this divergence, which goes as e to the 1 over beta, and limit beta goes to 0. And the way that I reproduce this divergence is a bunch of very high spin operators, as is usual in the light cone bootstrap story. And this crossing equation, the error term, is quantified by what the value of the twist gap is. So first, I'm going to give an argument by Hartman et al. That the twist gap is at most c minus 1 over 24. So let's take this equation and multiply both sides by some term e to the 2, some term in beta bar. So let's call this equation star. If we multiply both sides by e to the 2 pi beta bar, the twist gap, minus c minus 1 over 24. Let's look at the beta bar dependence on both sides is. On the left-hand side, the beta bar dependence will look like e to the negative 2 pi beta bar times h bar minus the twist gap. And by definition, every term that's not the vacuum will be positive for this, which means that if I take a derivative with respect to beta bar, the left-hand side is negative. Now let's look at what happens on the right-hand side. And I'm going to take the following order of limits. I'm going to take beta bar very large, but still much smaller than 1 over beta. So if I were to violate this limit, then I would no longer be in the light cone regime, and it would not have been fair to me to only single out the vacuum. But in this limit, the beta bar dependence is rather complicated. But in this limit, was that a question? No. The only term that's going to matter is going to be this term, because the other guys, like, as beta bar goes to 0, this will approach it like a 1. So the right-hand side will go as e to the 2 pi beta bar times t gap minus c minus 1 over 24. And you see that if the twist gap is bigger than c minus 1 over 24, I can make the derivative with respect to beta bar positive, which is a contradiction. So therefore, the twist gap is at most c minus 1 over 24. Oh, and a reference for this is this paper. OK, so this was the previous, and this is a rigorous upper bound on the twist gap, and it's precisely at the BTZ threshold. If you're interested in theories, build the ADS3. OK, any questions? OK, so now I'm going to talk about how the presence of a twist gap will imply there's an extended regime of validity for the Cardy formula. And then from there, we'll try to argue that we can do better than the C over 24. Yes?
Like, can this argument be also done numerically?
Yeah, very good. So the answer is yes. And in this paper by Ying, Scott, and Shi, they did it numerically by finding some functionals that, you know, have the right properties, and it approaches this value very, very, very closely.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. So first, let's recall the usual Cardy formula. So the density of Virasoro primaries, when both H and H bar are large compared to C, is given by the following. So here, I've approximated a sum of delta functions as a continuous spectrum. So in general, there will be some error terms that you have to quantify. I'm not going to do that in this talk, so that's one of the reasons why I say this is not a rigorous argument. So there's some smearing that you have to do, but I don't have anything intelligent to say about how to quantify that smearing. But in the usual Cardy formula, when H and H bar are both much bigger than the central charge, there's some universal formula for the density of Virasoro primary states. And the way you derive this is look at this crossing equation. When both beta and beta bar are very small, then you'll have an equation similar to this, and you do an inverse Laplace transform. And you need to make sure that the saddle that you evaluate the inverse Laplace transform satisfies the assumptions that both beta and beta bar are very small. And beta being small requires that H is much bigger than C, and beta bar is very small requires that H bar is much bigger than C. But now it's clear, actually, that in the presence of a twist gap, we can do a little bit better. Because we have a crossing equation that's valid only when one of beta and beta bar are small. So we should get a formula for an asymptotic density of states that's valid when H is very big compared to C, but H bar can be like, you know, order 1 or order C. So, okay, you guys can take inverse Laplace transforms as well as anyone. So if you take the inverse Laplace transform of this equation, you'll get the following. So this is the extended regime, and I'll write it in terms of the spin and the twist now. So I'm going to take h bar plus j to be very large. So this term so far looks very similar to the h dependence here. Yes. In which formula? This one or this one? This one. Yeah, sorry, it's good. It's e to the negative 2 pi beta times c minus 1 over 24 minus the twist gap. So where does this error come from? This error came because this is the right-hand side of the equation, this crossing equation, and I approximated the right-hand side of the crossing equation by the vacuum, because the vacuum is the most important guy in this limit. If the twist gap is t, then that guy will also contribute to this equation, to this order, as beta goes to 0. Yeah, good question. So it turns out that the h-bar dependence, which is the twist, which I don't need to take large, is simply given by the modular kernel, which Alex talked about a couple days ago. Let me just write it down, and I'll say words. So the actual details of the quotients don't matter so much, but all I did was simply take the inverse Laplace transform of this equation in beta and beta bar. I'll get this expression, and sort of actually by definition, the h bar dependence will simply be the modular kernel, and same with the h dependence. But this is valid now whenever h bar plus j is much bigger than c, and h bar does not have to be much bigger than c. So this is some extended regime of validity of the Cardi formula that's present for any theory with a twist gap. And now I want to take this formula and take an interesting limit of it. I want to take h bar to be much smaller than 1 over c, h bar minus c over minus 1 over 24 to be much smaller than 1 over c, so I can approximate the quotients with a Taylor expansion. So in this limit, can people see if I write down here? Maybe not. Okay, I'll write it over here. I can write there? Okay, great. So if I take h bar to c minus 1 over 24, there's some pi's, you'll get this kind of square root edge, where the h bar dependence is now polynomial. This is a valid large spin. Okay, so we're going to keep this and hold on to it for a bit. Right now it's a little bit unmotivated, but it'll be important later. So, but this is some sort of approximation for the density of states at very large spin and small twists. Small, but still above the BTC threshold. Okay, so any questions on this part? So far, all of the results that we have we've derived by using the S transform. And you could ask, is some density of states like this, asymptotic density of states, all you can possibly learn from the Lyapunov modular bootstrap? And the answer is no, you can learn more. And before I talk about what more you can learn, I think it's important to take a step back and kind of think about really what's really important in life in the big picture. There's a lot more to life than the S transform. There's also the T transform. So we could keep some perspective and look at our second favorite element of Bessel 2Z. Actually, I don't even have to erase very much at all. So we're still going to keep tau naught equal to tau bar star. And tau and tau bar live in the upper and lower half plane. And complex numbers can have real part. So we can give them arbitrary real parts. In this talk, I'm going to focus on real part is equal to 1 half. It's very easy to generalize the story that I'm about to say to any fraction r over s, but it's not particularly illuminating, so if you're interested in the details, you can ask me afterwards. So, of course, we can act with any element of SL2Z, but now s is not particularly natural to act on. What I really want to act on is some element of SL2Z that will take tau very close to the point I infinity, so then I can argue that I only get the contribution from the vacuum. So that element is this. You can see the 2 tau minus 1 downstairs will, you know, the 2 will make this 1 half a 1, minus 1 will kill it, so you'll get a beta downstairs. And beta goes to 0, so that's great. That means that in this transform frame, you'll only get the vacuum. And indeed, there are primes here. This is the transformed values in tau and tau bar. So there's a real part, which doesn't matter, because if beta goes to 0, I only get the contribution from the vacuum. And there's an I over 4 beta. Okay. If beta goes to 0, 4 beta is still very, very small, which means that in this transformed frame, I still only get the contribution from the vacuum. So I can now write down another crossing equation that has to be satisfied. It looks very similar to this one. But now, because there's this 1 half for tau and tau bar, there's a negative 1 to the j. So I'm treating even spins and odd spins differently. The right-hand side, OK, you can do the math. There's a 2 here. There's like a 4 here, a 4 here. And these minus signs change the pluses, which will actually be quite important for this. And there's a 4 here. Wait, any questions on this new and improved, this other crossing equation? Okay, so this is another crossing equation that has to be satisfied. And you can ask, did the density of states that we derived here at large spin satisfy this crossing equation? This is a well-defined math problem that you can ask. And the answer is no. If you take this expression and plug it into this equation, this new equation, you will not get a divergence as beta goes to 0. Instead, you'll approach a constant as beta goes to 0. Roughly speaking, you have this negative 1 to the j, which means you have, you know, a sum over some function of even terms minus that same sum over this function of odd terms. And there are techniques that you can approximate these sums as integrals, and you can control what the error is. So I'll say this in words, but everything I'm saying right now is completely rigorous. So there's an error that is order constant as beta goes to 0 by approximating the sum as an integral, and the integral it vanishes. If you're interested, this general type of techniques of approximating these sums as integrals and quantifying the error is something called Abel-Plana theory, and there are like great Wikipedia articles you can read about them. But right now, you can just take it as a fact that the rho j of h bar that we wrote before is not sufficient to solve this crossing equation. So there's more that we can learn from crossing that has not yet fully been milked. Similarly, for any fraction, it will not solve. So we can ask what rho j of h bar will solve this expression. There are a couple of ways that are equivalent that you can think about it. One way is that you can think of adding the equation that I just wrote, erase with this one, and you'll get expression for the even spin, a crossing equation for the even spin states and the odd spin states. You know, so it'll you know, because you'll have a 1 plus negative 1 to the j or a 1 minus negative 1 to the j, so you'll project onto even or odd spins. I'm just going to write down some density of states that solves this equation, but it's equivalent to what I said earlier. So I'll write it next to this one. So this is the difference, so I'll call this 2. So it looks very similar to the solution we wrote over here, with a couple of differences. There's a factor of 2, which doesn't really matter. The first is there's a negative 1 to the j here, which means that this distinguishes between spins that are even and spins that are odd, as opposed to this expression, which did not care if the spins were even or the spins were odd. Secondly, the expressions are much smaller, generically. Instead of e to the 4pi, it's e to the 2pi, so they're non-perturbatively smaller. It's valid when h is very large. Sorry. This formula is wrong. Okay, so there are two terms. There's a sum of Cauchys in H and a sum of Cauchys in H bar. Because I'm taking H very, very large, I shouldn't really trust the Cauchys in H. They should be exponentials. But I just wrote it this way because I didn't want to write this twice. The one difference is the negative 1 to the j. One difference is these Cauchys are generally much smaller if the argument is very large. And the third difference is that instead of subtracting the Cauchys, I'm adding them, which will be important later.
I'm sorry.
This is a 25. So let me just compare to this one here. Here, there's a c minus 1 over 24, c minus 25 over 24, and I'm subtracting them. Now I'm adding them, but now the 4pi is suppressed. Pi goes to 2pi. So if you plug this expression into this integral, and you do this integral, you'll get the right-hand side exactly.
I'm a bit confused. So the first row j was solving the first equation.
That's correct.
Yeah, and the second row j is solving the second equation, solving both.
It's solving the second equation. It's not solving the first equation. Now you could worry that they might pollute each other. Is this the question?
I'm worried about that.
Yeah, great. So, very good. So Slava's question is, I'm not allowed to write down like two different rows that are, there's only one density of states, and they have to satisfy all the crossing equations. So they have to satisfy both crossing equations that I wrote down. I'm not allowed to write down two density of states, one for each crossing equation. So the density of states that will solve both crossing equations is the sum of these two terms. And what you may worry is that I said that this density of states solved the first crossing equation. So now you might worry, what you add this term, what's going to happen to the first crossing equation when I add it? But the first crossing equation, if you remember, had no negative 1 to the j. So I put the second term, I have a bunch of signs. And by using these same theorems of Abella and Plana, you can show that this term, when inserted into the first equation, gives a constant piece as the limit as beta goes to 0. It doesn't give 0, but it gives a piece that's constant as beta goes to 0, and we need to reproduce a divergence as beta goes to 0. Similarly, this first piece will also give a constant as beta goes to 0 as opposed to a divergence. So these two terms will not spoil each other solving the crossing symmetry. Similarly, there will be a term that, this term treats all spins democratically. This spin discriminates spins mod 1 and mod 2. There will be a term that discriminates against spins mod 3, mod 4, mod 5, and so on and so forth. You can write down expressions for all of them, but I'm not going to do that. For those of you who are familiar with either the fairy tale of Dijkgraaf, Maldacena, Moore, and Verlinde, or the story by Maloney and Witten, these sums are a little bit reminiscent of some of the density of states that they found there. I think it's, in some sense, some of these features are universal. Okay, I want to take this expression rho 2 and also take the same limit that I took before. H bar goes to c minus 1 over 24 at fixed spin. So maybe I'll call this rho 1, just to distinguish them. So now, earlier I had a difference of Cauchys. So it was roughly 1 minus 1, which then means you have to go to higher order terms, which is why I got an h bar upstairs. Right? There's a 1 over square root of h bar downstairs. So this naively diverges as h bar goes to c minus 1 over 24. But the difference of Cauchys gives a more powerful zero. And so you actually get this square root upstairs. But you see here now the Cauchys are going to add. So this will just go to a number like 2 or something. So in the limit as h bar goes to c minus 1 over 24. The functional form is a little bit different. It's now negative 1 to the j over square root of h bar minus c minus 1 over 24 times e to the 2 pi. OK, any questions? OK, Of course, there are other corrections to the density of states as well that will come from this error term in the canonical ensemble crossing equation, and these come from low twist operators. And I'll comment on those later. But now I want to consider the sum of this term with this term. So I'm going to take, just formally, a very interesting limit, and we're going to ask what happens in this limit. Just as a function of j and h bar, if I take the following limit, I need j large, otherwise I don't trust this formula, so j much bigger than c, but also odd. There's an order one number, I think it's 8 pi squared or something. And I take the twist to be exponentially small. I think the 8 pi squared is correct. Oh, great, it is. So suppose I take the following limit. Because the h-bar dependence is different in these two terms, even though this term is more important exponentially in the spin, I can formally write it so that this term dominates, this term that's supposed to be much smaller, dominates over the S-transform term, which means that naively, I'm going to predict some universal density of states that's negative. Not only am I predicting that the density of states is negative, this formal density of states, if I integrate it over this rigid lambda, I'm actually going to get an exponentially large number of negative states. So let's call this region at fixed j lambda, and I'll write it over here. I'll write over here. We don't need this anymore. Yeah.
But if this gap was so small, could you really ignore the error in your target?
Say it again?
This is a very small gap.
Right? This is a very small region in H-bar, in twist space. Yeah, maybe I'll write this equation, maybe this will answer, and if not, you can ask again. So, if I take this very, very small region, although this region is very, very small, the density of states is very, very large, and if I integrate this density of states in this region, I get a very large negative number that's exponentially large in the spin. Now, this isn't literally, if this were the true density of states, this would be horrible, because we are not allowed a negative number of states. But there are a couple of caveats. First of all, right now, this is kind of a problem. One thing you could object to is that I wrote down a continuous density of states instead of the true discrete sum of delta functions, so there is some error term from the true density of states integrated in this region. I don't know how to quantify that, and it's possible that error term will drown this out, and that this isn't really an issue. Although I don't have a proof of this, my guess is that that's not the case, because these theories are necessarily irrational, which means that you don't have to integrate over a very large, you should sort of trust the Cardy formula to within high precision if you're getting a large number of states, but I don't have a proof of this. But
how large is the averaging window here?
The averaging window is very, very small. So the averaging window in twist space is exponentially small in the spin.
So you're saying you trust the Cardy formula even when you average over an exponentially small window?
Well, I'm just going to make the statement that the continuous density of states has a very large negativity here. It's definitely possible that you can evade this from some Tauberian theorems, or you can prove that this is really a problem. I'm not going to comment more about that.
I mean, usually the density of states is exponential, and so you might expect corrections you need to smear over windows that are larger than exponential in order to trust.
Yeah, them. I mean, so by that logic, I would be able to smear over anything that's larger than e to the minus 4 pi. And I'm smearing over something that's e to the minus 2 pi. You know, maybe you don't care about these 2 pi's, but they're in exponential.
Okay, thank you.
But this is not a rigorous statement. Maybe let me say the conclusion that I want to reach, and then I'll say what the possible mathematical caveats are. So let's ignore these subtleties for now about smearing and say that this is very bad. I have some negative density of states. But how do I cure this? What did I forget when I was looking at the vacuum contribution? And the thing that I forgot was to introduce the effects of low twist states. So let's suppose there's a single low twist state at some twist t. And this will be the second caveat I mentioned. The same contribution to this row in this region will go as the following. You can repeat the same argument for a single low twist state, and you'll get a contribution that looks like plus 1 over root. So now the h-bar is again downstairs. So a single low twist state will contribute this to the density of states in the same limits that I've taken, where I've taken h-bar very close to c minus 1 over 24. And if I want this to be bigger than the negativity that I have here for odd states, that implies that t-gap is less than or equal to c minus 1 over 32. So this is not a rigorous argument, and I'll say what loopholes are in a moment, but this is, I think, a suggestive argument that you have to, that a very natural way to cure the negativity that we see from looking at the S and ST squared images of the vacuum is to introduce a single state of twist at or below c minus 1 over 32. Now, there are some possible caveats that I think would be very interesting if we could either, you know, give a counterexample to this or to make this rigorous. One is the smearing, which we discussed. So it's not, you know, I wrote down a sum of delta functions. I approximated it as a continuum. And in general, there are errors that come from that. And the other possibility is a accumulation point in twist. So twists are allowed accumulation points, unlike scaling dimensions. And it's possible that you can get an accumulation point between c minus 1 over 32 and c minus 1 over 24 that both cures the negativity and also solves the crossing equation. It's not obvious that I don't have much to... Alex, you have a question.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to make the gap, twist gap, up to c minus 1 over 24, you would need to add lots of states.
That's true, So for every twist at or above c minus 1 over 24, you do need an accumulation point. But you see, even with an accumulation point, the spin dependence will be much smaller. The spin dependence will be, say, will still be this. The question is, can you make the h-bar dependence different such that it's more important in this limit? So you need a more severe divergence as h-bar goes to c minus 1 over 24 than a 1 over square root. And it's not obvious that, you know, just saying, that you, so you need the accumulation point to appear in a very specific way.
Right. Can you characterize, like, if I wanted to push the twist gap up to c minus 1 over 24, I would need lots of states.
Absolutely. So you need this 1 over square root to go as maybe this to the squared, something like that. So then you start to running into worries that it's possible that the density of states is not normalizable as c minus 1 goes to 24, and you can try to make arguments along this flavor to get around this point, but I don't know how to make an airtight one.
Could you estimate the number of states you would need to add if you wanted to get the twist gap up to c minus 1 over 2?
Yeah, that's right. So if you want, in general,
an exponentially large number of states.
Yeah,
compare that to how many black holes.
So if you want the twist gap to be c minus 1 over 24, that means that this exponential doesn't help you at all. Yeah. So you need to beat this negativity here.
Yeah. Just with
only through your h bar dependence. So it's not a question of how many, because you always add infinitely many states. The question is what's the growth is as the limit as h bar goes to c minus 1 over 24. So you can solve with it. So instead of a 1 over square root, you'll have to get some power law or some higher power law. I think it'll be, it has to be squared, which naively, if I just write that down, that's not good, because that means if I integrate in a finite energy window, I'll get an infinite number of states.
I see.
But I don't know how to make that a sharp, ruling this out.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, so now let me make some comments.
Sorry, I just have a very naive question. So it looks like you got this some mileage out of this 1/2, right? Because then it allowed you to distinguish even and odd.
Which 1/2?
the one half that you decided to put in the tau and tau bar, right? It was a clever choice of this one half that ended up giving you this ability of distinguishing odd and even, right?
That's right.
But then could you choose another choice that distinguishes multiples of four?
Absolutely.
And will they not lead and change the conclusion?
This is a great question. It turns out no. It turns out one half, one third, one fourth, et cetera, you don't get any extra mileage. So the question is, you know, we learn something turning real part from zero to one half. Can we learn something more turning like one half to one third? So I didn't write them down, but you can solve the crossing equation for general R over S. And for us, the strategy that we were using is taking h bar to c minus 1 over 24 and seeing what the dependence in h bar is. So the reason we were able to play this game is that for this solution, we got different scaling behavior than in this solution. But it turns out for the fractions, 1 half, and all fractions that are not 0, the scaling dependence in h bar is the same. It's 1 over square root of h bar. So you don't gain anything more, and the spin dependence will be smaller. So you don't gain anything more by looking at well, to my knowledge, you don't get anything more for this particular game looking at other fractions, but it is something that one could explore.
You say the exponential is smaller.
That's right. In general, this exponential will be 4 pi over s, where s is the where the real part of tau and tau bar is r over s. So we had an exponential of 4 pi for 0 over 1, and for 1 over 2, we had an exponential of 4 pi over 2. Say again? Yeah, and this minus 1 to the j will also change. Now this minus 1 to the j will be something that depends on spin mod 3 mod 4. It's like e to the 2 pi over, yeah.
So maybe you can comment a bit on the uniqueness for row 2, because you have this minus 1 to the j, so any kind of Taberian theorem is...
Yeah, good question. I think the uniqueness of row 2, I don't think there's a big difference in uniqueness for row 1 and row 2 for the following reason. Suppose instead of phrasing this, so you're worried about the signs here, right? Yeah, suppose instead of phrasing this as solving this crossing equation, I had two crossing equations where I took the original one and added it to this and subtracted it from this. Then I would have no minus 1 to the j, and I just have an expression for row even and row odd. This is manifestly positive guy, and I can take the inverse Laplace transform, and the solution will be the sum of these two and the difference of these two expressions.
Right, but then you have a sum of positive, like one sum minus another sum.
No. I can write down a crossing equation that's the left-hand side is all positive, the right-hand side is still positive. The left-hand side is all positive is just the density of states for even spins. Maybe we can talk. I mean,
what's the right hand side there?
The right hand side would be, some expression of beta and beta bar that I know that's given by the sum and difference of the previous expressions I wrote down. Maybe we can talk afterwards if this.
Okay.
Let me just wrap up. I have just 5 minutes anyway, so let me just make some comments connecting to other work and also some comments about theories of pure gravity. So I just want to make 3 comments. The first is we predict this negative density of states for any partition function with a twist gap that's too big. And it would be nice if we could test this prediction. And earlier I mentioned that we don't know of any partition functions with discrete spectrum that have non-zero twist gap. But I do know of one family of partition functions with continuous spectrum that have non-zero twist gap. And this comes from a very beautiful series of two papers by, these are the numbers. The first one by Alex and Witten, so Maloney Witten. And the second one is a follow-up by Christoph Keller and Alex Maloney, where the basic idea of these papers was to do the following.
Sorry, just one more question. So can you, now that you have a new guess for what this bound is, can you get some more inspired guess for functionals and do it numerically?
Yeah, great question. Okay, that was going to be the third comment. I'll just make that the first comment. Great. So you could ask, can you write down, so the question is, the previous bound of c minus 1 over 24, there was also some numerics that were in accordance with this. And the question is, can you write down some functionals that can prove or disprove this bound? And the answer is naively no. And here's the reason why. What would the strategy for a functional be? The strategy would be to write down a functional that's positive So let's say here's H in H bar space. Here's C minus 1 over 24. Here's C minus 1 over 32. That's positive, let's say, of some definite sign for all states of twist below C minus 1 over 32 and negative for the others, and derive some contradiction this way. But if such a functional exists, the problem is I can apply to a theory that does not have a vacuum and has states only starting at C minus 1 over 24. So one such theory is Liouville theory. So Liouville theory doesn't have a vacuum, and it just has a spectrum here of only scalar operators. And it's a modular invariant partition function. So whatever functional that you write down, it better vanish on the Liouville theory. So it's impossible to write down a functional that has definite sign for all states above C minus 1 over 32, because that would lead to a contradiction with Liouville theory. And in fact, maybe you can do something more clever with your functionals by doing something like imposing discreteness or imposing that the ratio of the vacuum to the number of states here is not infinite, is bounded. So that could be an avenue that one could explore to get the C minus 1 over 32. That we haven't explored. But just if you just naively take the functional strategy that was done by Scott and Ying and Shi, this strategy will never do better than C minus 1 over 24, even if the optimal gap is below C minus 1 over 24, because there exist these spurious solutions of 2D CFT, which do not have a unique SL-TOR, which do not have an SL-TOR invariant vacuum. And it's very easy for these functionals to rule out some possible spectrums, but to my knowledge, it's very difficult for them to like demand that there exists, you know, a particular state. It would be very interesting to like explore these functionals with some extra constraints, as you were saying, like the number of states here is not a million times bigger than the number of states here. Similarly, by the way, for the scaling modular bootstrap, so there are bounds by you guys and also by Nima and Amir about that are like C over 8 or C over 9. So there the extremal functionals, the zeros of the extremal functionals eventually stabilize to some theory with some scaling gap of C over 9, just looking at the S transform. But suppose it were the case that using the full SL2Z you can do better than C over 12. So suppose that were the case. You'll never see that from this strategy, because again, you'll run into this issue where the Liouville theory doesn't have a vacuum and has a scaling gap naively of C over 12. So in that situation, what will happen is the zeros of the functional, instead of approaching the extreme spectrum, what they'll do is they'll condense. So the zeros of the functional will get denser and denser, and the limit will be that it vanishes for all states at twist above C minus 1 over 24. I think it would be very interesting to see this numerically. I actually asked Scott and Ying, showed me some of their plots, and at 43 derivative order, it was kind of inconclusive. It wasn't stabilizing to anything, which is good, because that would be a contradiction with Liouville theory. But it wasn't yet obvious if they were coalescing. Is that a fair statement? Okay, so this is the first comment then about functionals, about how if we want to learn this numerically, in principle, I think we can, but we have to modify our strategy a little bit by demanding that the vacuum is not washed out by like a million copies of Liouville theory or a million copies of a C equals one free boson. Okay, any more questions? Okay. The second comment I want to make is about testing this prediction we made of a negative density of states. I only know of one family of partition functions which have non-zero twist gap. They have a continuous spectrum, and they were this series of two papers by Keller, Maloney, and Witten. And the strategy is roughly the following. You take the Virasoro vacuum character at some central charge, and roughly speaking, you do an SL2Z sum over this vacuum character. This sum is divergent, but you can regulate it in various ways. And at the end of the day, you'll get an answer that's finite, it's modular invariant, and it has spectrum of support only at the vacuum and at twist gap strictly C minus 1 over 24. So this is a modular invariant function. You can check it even numerically. It's very nice. It's very, very explicit. And now you can ask, well, we predict that because the twist gap is too big, we predict a negativity of precisely this magnitude if we're in this regime lambda. And actually, you can take the expression in these papers and both analytically and numerically see that for odd spin and very small twist, there is this negativity precisely where we predict. However, if you then add another Melone-Witten-Keller type function of twist at or below C minus 1 over 32, you'll precisely cure this negativity in the way that we predict. So these functions are the only examples of functions that I know of with non-zero twist gap, and they do sort of match our prediction, which is a nice check, but of course, that's not a proof. I want to make one final comment, which I think is, although I missed the talk, I think it's related to what Scott talked about the first week, which is what this, C minus 1 over 32, why this is also kind of an interesting value for CFTs. So there was in a recent paper by Scott, Eric, Henry, and Jan Gobel, Scott, Henry Maxfield, Eric Perlmutter, and Jan Gobel, with archive number, 18110570. They introduced the notion of what they called Virasoro mean field theory, and the question they're asking was basically what the analog of double twist operators in D equals 2 is. And in D equals 2, if you expand in Virasoro blocks, the one sentence summary was that instead of the twists adding, the Liouville momentum added, which is some coordinate transformation of the twist, but roughly speaking, the twists add with some formula. And C minus 1 over 32 is precisely the value of the twist such that the double twist operators are at the BTZ threshold. So if you believe a result, we are saying that you have to have, let's say, some Virasoro primary operator below this threshold of C minus 1 over 32. Now, the modular bootstrap will not teach you more because I can write down a modular invariant positive function that has this twist gap, for example, by using the strategies of Melone, Witten, and Keller. But if we combine this with the four-point function results of Scott and friends, what they are saying is that you have to have a Reggie trajectory at some twist below C minus 1 over 24, which at large spin asymptotes is some twist below C minus 1 over 24. So if you believe this bound that we proposed, combining it with their results means that any theory of quantum gravity in ADS3 has to have infinitely many operators with twist below C minus 1 over 24. And it would be very interesting to construct a partition function of this type, for example, by trying to resum the Reggie trajectories and doing some SL2Z sum or some strategy like this. But I just wanted to point out that this number C minus 1 over 32 can pop up in many places, and it would be really interesting to explore if there was some deeper reason to this and some maybe universal structure that's always present in 2D CFTs. So with that, I'll stop there. Thanks very much.
So you mentioned in the beginning that there are no exact partition function with integer, a positive spectrum that is on the twist gap. How about approximate?
I don't know of any. I think that would be very nice to get.
In the crossing problem, we know lots of approximate solution crossing just by looking at functional.
Yeah. Device. Yeah. I think it's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I don't know of any even approximate solution. Maybe someone in the audience knows. I think this is a great question.
In terms of the application.
In terms of the application to pure gravity, like the one very explicit conjecture for a pure gravity partition function is Witten's extremal CFTs, which are not of the class of theories that you're studying here, but they do have the property that the gaps are gigantic. Right, the gaps in the spectrum of order one.
Right.
And so you might worry, and the boxed formula over there, you're hoping that Cardi's formula works on an exponentially small region,
yeah.
Which is exactly what you wouldn't expect
if the
theory is integrable or close to integrable, because the gaps are going to be large.
Right.
So you might, I'm not actually sure how it works. This is a slightly different limit. You're taking large J at fixed H bar.
Right.
But you might worry that, if the pure gravity theory you're after is either integrable or something like it, it would have gaps that are larger than exponential. And so you might worry about the applicability of that.
Yeah, this is a good point. In general, you may worry. Let me just make one comment. As you know, of course, what Alex is talking about is there was a paper 6 months before this one, where Witten proposed some CFTs that were completely integrable, that were he hoped to be dual to pure gravity by demanding holomorphic factorization, which is a huge assumption, of course. But there, the spectrum has exact integer spacing, so you may worry that there the smearing will not work. And indeed, for those theories, I have absolutely no comment because they have zero twist cap.
Yeah,
their twist cap is like very zero. There's like a bunch of every state is a current. So I guess for theories with zero twist cap, I have no comment except that if the twist cap is zero, it's certainly less than C-1/32. But yeah, thanks for this comment.